What's going on, everybody? It is that time again. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 267 on this Friday, April 30th, 2026. Final day of April. Josh Callaway, Colin Kennedy here with you. Got a number of recruiting updates to get into. 2027, been busy. Oklahoma made an addition on their defensive line. Will they make more? We'll discuss. They also lost a running back. Will they pivot? We'll discuss. Also have some updates in 2028 as the very first Top 247 is out, and the NFL draft in the books. Colin and I will recap it a little bit. Seven OU guys had their name called last week in Pittsburgh. We'll put a bow on that as well. It's a packed, busy Thursday football show, final day of April, to send you on your way into your very first May weekend. A reminder, though, before we start, subscribe to Sooners Illustrated at oklahoma.247sports.com. Use the promo code SoonersPod60, all one word, for listening on podcasts. That'll get you 60% off a VIP membership to Sooners Illustrated, the entire 247 Sports Network. Take advantage, be with us all throughout the spring and into the summer, and obviously fall camp and the next season when we get there. Be with us every single day over at Sooners Illustrated. All right, CK. Sure. Did not have a show earlier this week. Tom has some other things going on, so it's been a minute. It's been a full week since the last time we had a show, which is a long time for me. It feels like I haven't spoken to the masses in a while. I've moved. I'm in the new place now.
Yeah.
It's just an empty room right now. Hopefully we build it up into something, but it's been a hectic last week for me. How about for you? How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, it feels like we've all had on the staff a lot going on behind the scenes, family wise. And so, you know, certainly thinking about Tom and his family, but, you know, for me, like, had a really busy last couple of days with the family, went out to Tulsa, went out to Norman, got to spend some time with the loved ones, and it's been a good couple of days. Obviously, I'm ecstatic for your move. It looks like you hit the night mode on your background, which is probably more of a lighter cream. I don't know what color this is.
It's like, I don't know. It's almost like, I can't tell if it's like a gray or like a olive, like a green. I think it's, I can't tell, but it's dark.
It's green.
Like it's dark mode.
Okay. I have my computer screens. I do the whole like yellow light. I bump down the blue light on all my screens, if that makes sense. So it looks brown in my screen, which is probably contributing to that.
It could be, yeah. I mean, you could talk me into it being a bit of a brown.
But for the record, I'm staring at a very yellow screen. So I don't need, I realize now I have no idea what color it is. But yeah, excited for you and the wife and the daughter to be moving into the new house. Yeah. And I'm excited to talk some ball. We got a lot to yuck about today.
Yes, we do, actually. It's been kind of busy on the recruiting side, certainly, and we'll get into that. And we'll obviously recap the NFL draft a little bit as well. On the back end, a lot of OU guys had their names called. Maybe not where we thought they would in some cases, and we'll discuss. So a lot to kind of wrap up there. But let's get into the recruiting news of the week first. They got another defensive lineman. We touched on it last week. You kind of previewed it, you know, last Thursday, saying, hey, Monday night, keep an eye out for this. And it did go Oklahoma's way. Sione Falila, the California defensive line prospect, however you want to say it, jumps in with Oklahoma. Colin, just get into, I know we've it's a name that we've talked about a little bit the last few weeks, but to put him into the fold in that defensive line for Todd Bates felt like a natural fit, and they got it done. Just kind of put a wrap on it. And if you're someone who is tuning in for the first time, whether, you know, haven't seen the last few shows or whatever it may be, what is Oklahoma getting in Sione Falila? What's kind of the tribute or the attribute, I should say, attribute that stands out about him when kind of looking at his tape or what kind of a player he is?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We've talked about this guy so much, and as I was working through prep for the show today, I kind of realized we haven't really discussed Sione Falila, the defensive tackle. We've talked about his recruitment a number of different times, but usually I kind of wait to save the player breakdowns a little bit until that recruit's actually in the mix. And so I'm sure a lot of people that have listened to our show frequently are kind of curious for a little bit on Falila, the player. the recruitment, look, whether you have been following this or not, there's really not a ton to say. He picks Oklahoma over BYU, Arizona State, Cal, and Kansas. If I remember correctly, he visited for Future Freaks weekend, which was OU's big junior day. And on that weekend, I mean, going in, we noted on the site to our subscribers, like, hey, I had been hearing, Blair Angulo had been hearing that Oklahoma is one to watch for this guy. I don't think he had visited right. Norman yet to that point, but OU had already invested a lot into the recruitment. And when he takes the trip, I mean, full transparency, now that it's kind of over, I was preparing, based on what I had heard, for Falilah to commit that weekend. I thought it was on the verge of getting done. He ends up pacing himself amidst, what, 7 commits that weekend? So felt like the Sooners were close to getting an 8th. He visits Oregon, if I remember, shortly thereafter. And you're like, okay, maybe this one ends up taking a little bit of time. Nope. It kind of quickly went right back to, hey, this is still Oklahoma's recruitment to lose. And then as he schedules his commitment date for April 27th, he visits the Oklahoma spring game a matter of days before that. So writing was on the wall here.
Yeah.
This was a guy for weeks that it felt like Oklahoma was going to end up getting. And look, as far as the player himself, I think that this is an incredibly high floor prospect who is just such a perfect fit for Oklahoma. There are Jaden Jackson comparisons going out there on the intranet. I would personally like to say, let's calm down a little bit.
Freshman All-American, probably going to NFL soon.
Jaden Jackson's like one of the truly best high-floor defensive tackles I have seen in my career, especially in person.
Sure.
You know, watching Jaden Jackson at IMG was a experience. This is a good football player. I think that there is certainly a lot left on the plate in terms of the next steps. But when you talk about a guy who's 6'2", hovering from the 285 to 300-pound range over the course of his prep career, plays in an even front at the high school level and is kind of seen, you know, going from 3-tech into 1 and all in between. I do love the fact that he has clear penetrating one gap style approach to him, but I do think he has the ability to be kind of that two gapper style as well, which is part of what makes someone like a Jaden Jackson so great.
Mm-hmm.
Can he do it to that level? I am curious to find out. That being said, from the alignment versatility to the role versatility in terms of what he's capable of doing as an interior defensive lineman, I loved watching him on tape. I loved the balance that he played with. When he takes on double teams, he handles that very well at the high school level and plays with pretty good leverage, and I think he takes on contact very effectively. And then on the note of that balance stuff, whether it is taking on double teams, maybe in the run game, or pursuing as a attacking one-gap style kind of guy, a pass rusher especially, I loved his ability to redirect at times and pursue as a bigger-bodied interior guy. So really quality player. I'm a big fan of this guy on tape.
Yeah.
And again, it's just like, when you watch him and you understand what Oklahoma wants to do with its interior defensive linemen, I mean, we haven't even really talked about all the different games that they run up front with those guys. This guy's going to be able to do everything OU's going to ask of him. It's easy to see why OU chose to prioritize him for so long.
Yeah, no, he's an interesting name for sure. And, you know, you throw out a Jaden Jackson comparison. I know you were trying to slow that down a little bit, obviously, yeah. But yeah, you know, that's always going to pique your interest. And they are similar, you know, Sione Felillo, we got him at 6'2", 285 right now. When Jaden signed at Oklahoma, we had him at 6'2", 300. So obviously you get Felillo his senior year of high school, maybe gets closer to that number, and they'd be, you know, similar body types. I mean, it is a fun comparison to make, especially in the recent history here. And look, the reality is too, yeah, he's a little, you know, under recruit if you want to look at that. I mean, they didn't go, you know, his top five, the fan who just is casual, you know, and keeping up with this sort of thing is going to look and be like, you always feel better when you beat like Georgia or something, right? The other SC programs. Todd Bates, man, just trust Todd Bates. I have full, complete trust in Todd Bates to find the right guys. And yeah, Sione just feels like, you know, a really just whenever you were talking about him the last few weeks, it just always kind of felt like, yeah, this is just a fit that seems to make sense kind of all around. So fun to add him in. He's our third defensive tackle of the class. Obviously with Devin Robertson and Elijah Harmon, they have Crew Jones on the edge, obviously. And we've talked about some potential additions coming there in due time, obviously, maybe at some point between now and December signing day. So let me just ask you that. What is kind of next for Oklahoma on the defensive line? Like I said, three D tackles now with Felillo. You have Crew Jones on the edge. We've talked about Nelson and Wolf Graham. We've talked about some other edge guys. Where do you think is Oklahoma's attention now, defensive line-wise, as far as what could be next? What do you think they could still add? Where are you kind of at along the defensive line for Todd Bates and Miguel Chavis and Brent Venables, obviously, on that defense?
So first, I think that they're going to go ahead and wrap the defensive tackle haul with this trio. If they wanted to go out and find a fourth for any reason, totally understand it. They're playing with a lot of leverage from this point forward, right? They can kind of pick and choose their spots. We'll see. I think that if they wanted to call it these three guys, it makes a ton of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, it's all kind of chips to the center of the table as far as edge recruiting, the defensive end room. I would say there's probably two spots left to go, and we've thrown out a number of names. Sam Nelson, younger brother of Matthew Nelson, was on campus in Norman for the spring game. Curious, been trying to dig, sort through everything that's been going on and trying to get a sense of where Arkansas is out of the last couple of weeks. But I think that it's pretty apparent OU feels rightfully optimistic about it standing there. And then Miguel Chavis was just out at Maple Mountain in Utah to see Uila Wolfgram. So it's the contact period. The staff can go hit the road and see all these guys in person. Miguel Chavis was just out there visiting with Uila and his family, stopped by the high school, spent some time with him, the coaching staff there. So Oklahoma getting right back in front of one of its priority targets. And then we've talked about those two a lot. So hand up, you know, man enough to say it, as the trend is right now on social media or whatever. Miles Smith, defensive end out of the state of Michigan. So he visited, I believe that was for the junior day. And it was like, okay, you know, is Oklahoma going to be a part of this? A couple of days ago, come to find out, doesn't look like OU is currently on his visit schedule. Felt like maybe things were going in separate directions. But while Miguel Chavis was out on the road visiting guys like Wolf Graham, also made a stop out to see Miles Smith. So kind of an interesting little roller coaster stretch here with another defensive end target. I mean, obviously Crew Jones, the upkeep of that commitment is going to be priority one. But you've kind of got this subtle trio of options for roughly two spots. And I personally thought, well, maybe Miles Smith is kind of out of the equation with him having eyes on other big-time programs, but OU went back out there to see him, reestablish that line of communication. I'm curious to see what comes from that. I'm curious to see what comes from the other two we talk about. It's all defensive end recruiting from here, in my opinion, and I'm keeping an eye on those trio of names. if you had me rank them in terms of my optimism on the three moving forward with OU, I would say Sam Nelson one, Uila Wolfgram two, Miles Smith three. Let's see what changes over the next couple of months, but these guys will receive OU's attention moving forward.
You thinking, I'm pretty sure I may have asked you this before, but it doesn't hurt to reiterate. You thinking one, maybe two?
I think two. I think that if you have Crew Jones, but then similar to the defensive tackle trio, if you can add two more quality pieces to go with Crew Jones to continue to build up that depth. I mean, Taylor Wine, PJ Adebarwe, Okoye is not going to be around for much longer. You know, like there are guys towards the top, and you know, we have talked about the defensive end room. What does the depth of that group look like going into next season and potentially even moving forward? So I think three is what you're shooting for in the cycle.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I think Wine obviously is a guy that is intending to jump after this year. And, I mean, I wouldn't put it past Danny. I mean, if he has the year that he is draft eligible this year, that'd be kind of quick for him. But he looks insane. So he might have a year worthy of it. Really, you know, exciting names, frankly, all of them. They're very intriguing and exciting prospects in their own regard, and they're all fun. And yeah, I saw the photo, Miguel Chavis with Uila Wolfgram, unbelievable backdrop out there. You noted it on Twitter. It's unbelievable. It didn't look real.
And I kept zooming in to make sure it wasn't AI. I was like, is this? That's how this AI
there in Utah. It's crazy. And the BYU game a few years ago, that it's like a painting out there. It's crazy. And then, the getting the full body photo of Wolfgram, the head and neck is just like, yes, I want that guy. I mean, go look at the photo. That's all I got to say. Go look at the photo. Just, you're like, that guy is going to run through people. There's no way he doesn't. So, it's some fun options, though. I mean, Miguel Chavis has recruited really well, and he's got one really good guy already in the bank in Crew Jones. And if they can get two of these three, you're in really good shape, it feels like. So we'll see. We'll continue to update that, obviously. Those will be some big names that will be at the forefront for us, it feels like, kind of moving into the summer months here. On the other end of the spectrum, so they did gain, obviously, Sione Falele this week. He was their 20th commit, or maybe was he 20? Was this before or after Stowe? I think it was before.
It was after.
After. I couldn't remember. It's all a blur. So he was their 20th commit, which they already had 20 before. And that's because they did lose one in the last week since we last spoke, which was Jackson Stokes, one of the two running backs that Oklahoma had in 2027, flipped to Cal over the weekend. They obviously have Keldred Benn elsewhere, also in the class. We'll kind of talk about what's maybe next at running back in 2027. But, Colin, I'll let you kind of put a bow on Stokes here, whatever direction you want to take it. You know, obviously, and this is the case of all the running backs that they have committed in 27 and no longer 28 when you talk about going back to Micah Rhodes. They're all pre-Dylan McCullough, right? So it's all kind of like we talked about at the time whenever Dylan came in, phenomenal hire. We think he's going to be really good. But, you know, DeMarco Murray was extremely good at recruiting, developed relationships. Players love the idea of playing for him and all that. I don't know if that played a role in here. You can get into that way, way better than me. But obviously, again, we kind of just from the outside, and every OU fan had the same thought of like, well, are we going to hang on to these running backs? And now this is obviously the second one, along with Micah Rhodes in 28, who Oklahoma has lost since DeMarco Murray moved on to the NFL. What angle are you wanting to take here? What kind of stuck out to you about what happened with Stokes? And is it just a coaching change thing? Is there more to it? How do you want to kind of tackle that?
Yeah, when it happened, to be honest with you, my first thought was, I mean, it makes sense. So Jackson Stokes, let me start with this. Whenever all of that went down, I know that the Oklahoma staff and front office was preparing ahead of time. It was known, very apparent, that whatever the level of possibility, there was some level of possibility that Oklahoma might lose one of its two running backs. And the preparation for that event had been taking place well before this was even a dynamic that OU had to account for. So I don't know that the Sooners were necessarily – all that caught off by surprise. I think that the other part of this too is Dylan McCollough, his entrance into the program. DeMarco Murray was the one who picked up Jackson Stokes' commitment. Maybe there is or isn't something there. Who knows, right? And what I will say is that while Oklahoma was accounting for this and evaluating other running backs out there, I think that Jackson Stokes was probably someone who was evaluating his future in Norman with his primary recruiter gone. And so in Cal, who picks up his flip, you know, we've hinted at this. Some of those California schools with new staffs are rolling right now on the recruiting trail. And Cal, definitely part of that. Tosh Lupoy and his staff are killing it right now. The passion that they have for the game is infectious. I think it's spreading throughout that program. And that is a program and fan base that wants a winner, right? Like, I still remember the college game day trip out there, and it looked incredible. And so with Lupoy and his staff's effort, I think there's a lot of backing and buy-in from the fan base. And through that, I think Cal has a very effective pitch to prospects like Jackson Stokes. Hey, man, stay close to home. Have a better shot at earlier playing time. You're going to be comfortable in familiar territory, and we have a clear vision for you in this program that you know well. And I think it is important to consider that beyond just DeMarco Murray's exit, I mean, Oklahoma has a lot of running backs who could stick around for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
I mean, we're quick to forget Torrey Blaylock's a sophomore.
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. You got these two freshmen. Torrey Blaylock's a young guy. You know, I mean, Xavier Robinson it's only his third year. I mean, it's not like he's ancient, you know.
Lloyd Avant has some eligibility left to him as well.
You have Keldrick Benn in the same class, which is continuing to climb the rankings, you know.
Right. So I think that all parties involved, from Oklahoma to Jackson Stokes to Cal, all kind of knew what was going on here and understand. So,
yeah.
Again, I don't blame the guy at all. I'm wishing Jackson Stokes a lot of success at Cal. I think it's a pretty good fit long term. And with that, OU has a spot to use at back in 2027.
No doubt. And that's where obviously we'll shift next. And just, you know, to put a bow on it, look, we said it all along. I mean, it's just the way it goes. This 2027 class is great. We talk about the number, like, man, how many guys are they going to take? 25, 30? It's like we always said, like, odds are a couple of these guys will probably, you know, flip to somewhere else. They want to sign with OU. Here's one right here with Stokes going to Cal. To your point, so they have an open spot. Where are they shifting based off their actions? Though, I mean, it'd be disingenuous for me to word it in, are they going to look to replace? Because I know they already have extended an offer. You had the story over at Sooners Illustrated. Where is Oklahoma shifting the focus? Because it seems pretty clear that they would like to still take a second running back to go with Keldrick Benn. What's the name there? Because it's a name that I wasn't super familiar with. Dive into it, though, as far as where Oklahoma is maybe shifting to maybe replace Stokes in that 27 class for Dylan McCollough.
Yeah, it's funny. I had a whole spiel ready to go with a ton of different layers of information and takes, and now a new offer goes out a matter of hours ago, and all that's out the window. So I'll say this. I think the curiosity about this after the Stokes flip was, well, does Oklahoma even choose to pursue another 2027?
Right, and that would have been my question yesterday. You know,
and had you asked me even a matter of hours ago, I thought, I feel like they're going to play it patiently, let this cycle play out a little bit, get some senior tape going, and maybe buy into a guy that proves the value over the course of the next few months. That was how I was seeing it. Now, what I will say is we had another story on Sooners Illustrated, a interview with a different 2027 running back recruit. And so if you're interested in reading up on a really intriguing prospect who I had a great time talking to, encourage you to, again, go to Sooners Illustrated, subscribe, Yeah. That story was a lot of fun to put together. It's caught a lot of attention. And so I thought, okay, maybe this fascinating developmental recruit that they just visited, maybe they let him play out, some others play out. But again, we're in the contact period. And as this staff is out there roaming around, they end up saying, you know what? We're looking at a guy right now in person and we like him. So the offer was extended today to TJ Lewis, Bolingbrook High in the state of Illinois, 6 foot. We have him at 215. I've heard he's up to 220, 225 pounds. Here's what I will lead off with. When the offer was extended and I was reading some things behind the scenes in our database stuff, I was reaching out to people who I trust. The name that has been thrown my way a couple of times, I'm not here to throw the comp down quite yet, but maybe some resemblance of an Xavier Robinson here.
Well, I was going to say, the photo of him, I haven't seen a lick of tape yet, so don't get me wrong. The photo, the kid is large.
Yes.
I mean, he looks like a beast based off the photo.
So I have the story up on the site for OU fans, but I linked his huddle tape into the story for people to watch.
Speaking at that.
So while Josh watches for a raw reaction, here's where I want to start. During the 2025 season, reportedly, Lewis totaled 227 carries for 1,784 yards and 21 touchdowns, averaged 7.85 yards per carry in 11 games. So again, played 11 games and totaled those numbers. He added 6 catches for 81 yards and another touchdown. So 22 scores in total. A high level of production, big bodied dude, downhill north-south runner. I don't think it's hard to see why OU likes this guy. And to go with it, there are already a couple of Big Ten programs, Big 12 programs that have been after this guy for quite a while. So his first ever offer was from Indiana and that staff from back in 2025. Hoosiers invested early. Illinois is in here. Minnesota is in here. Kansas is in here. Has a number of other offers. It makes sense. And Oklahoma ended up offering one of his teammates at Bolingbrook in the 2028 cycle today. So they're doing their due diligence out here. But in terms of Lewis, I talked about the recruitment status a little bit on the site. Oklahoma's now involved, and OU's probably going to have to work pretty quickly. His OV slate's pretty booked up. Not a ton of open dates, but you can understand why Oklahoma goes ahead and makes this move. And so moving forward, the next steps are essentially try to get this guy on campus and see how much ground you can gain in relation to some of the other competitors in this recruitment. And what I will say, to kind of tie back what else I was mentioning earlier, Lewis is pretty far down the road with his recruitment. So Oklahoma's going to have to make a lot of noise in a short amount of time. Obviously, in an ideal situation for Oklahoma, and we'll be talking about this for however many weeks moving forward, but obviously OU comes in, gets what it needs to get done, and then finds a way to pick up his commitment in the end. If that's not the case, then one of the other recruits that I wrote about and any number of others still become a viable option. Feels like this is the first guy OU wants to take a shot at, and I totally understand. So really interesting player, and I am very curious to see how this recruitment is handled by the folks in Norman moving forward.
Yeah, fun player. You know, I have the huddle tape pulled up here. I've been watching the last couple few minutes while you were talking. And yeah, you said it best, in north south, he is get downhill, hit the hole at full speed. And I was really impressed. You know, I thought when I threw it on, just based again off the photo, I thought I was gonna see a lot of just truck sticking guys, and there is that, but he's running away from dudes. I mean, he's got some legitimate speed, just cutting upfield and just running by people that can't catch up to him. So he's got some good wheels on him. I'm curious what his like 40, like his measurables would be speedway. Cause he looked pretty, like he was moving pretty good considering the size, especially, but yeah, north, south, got out, caught some passes. It's a fun player, fun name. And I'm curious to see if they can develop into it. And if it can be someone that ends up being a thing for Oklahoma for too long. Yeah, I'm with you. The north, south, that's what stuck out to me. You said it like right as I was watching him just, I mean, it was good, clear vision, see the hole, hit it at full speed, no hesitation, and then just gone because he's got wheels. So fun guy, fun name to keep an eye on, and we'll obviously be keeping close tabs on moving into the summer here for T.J. Lewis. Could be Oklahoma's next running back, and what would be the first, right, for Dylan McCullough, if that's
right,
true McCullough guy, if that's the way it goes. We'll keep an eye on that. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast. We'll be back after this short break. One last recruiting thing. We want to make sure to hit a little housekeeping item. The first top 247 for the 2028 class has been released. Wanted to get your thoughts, Colin, as far as the Oklahoma angle of this thing. Obviously, you're the right guy to ask as far as some names that have Oklahoma ties that you wanted to kind of touch on. Obviously, we had the initial top 247 rankings update for the 2028 class. What stands out to you from the Oklahoma side that fans should be aware of?
Yeah, I think that it's been fun because on our board, you know, our subscribers and OU fans have started to kind of ask about, hey, give us some names in 2028.
That shift is happening. Yeah.
Especially because they have 20 guys committed, right? And they were on the verge of 21. So I think Sooner fans are rightfully starting to turn the page a little bit. And that for me, as a recruiting nerd, excites me because this 2028 class, as we drop the full top 247, the initial one for the cycle, like you go up and down the list, you're like, man, you're starting to try to put the puzzle pieces together. So I just wanted to throw out a couple of names of guys that are either debuting or still in the top 247 for Oklahoma fans to really start to get to know. Throw out just a couple of names, and I threw out several more that, like, hey, here are some highly ranked dudes in this cycle that I feel really good about in terms of Oklahoma standing with them.
Sure.
I think it starts with Kellen Hall, the defensive lineman out of the state of Kentucky, 6'4", 265-pounder, can play defensive end, can play defensive tackle. I mean, just – one of my favorites, has been for a while. And I was putting together my notes package for the rankings update, just trying to do a quick hitter style thing on, hey, here's where OU kind of stands with a lot of these guys right now. And man, I think we really kind of skimmed over the fact that Oklahoma on its Future Freaks Junior Day weekend invited all 2027s and then Kellen Hall. I think we skipped over the fact that they basically said, let's get all of our top-tier junior targets in, but let's make sure we get one 2028 in there, and it was this guy. I mean, this is what I was thinking about, right? It's interesting timing, and we're going to probably talk about this a lot more, so I won't spend a ton of time on it. It's interesting timing in that guys like David Stone and Jaden Jackson are about to be on their way out, right? But Kellen Hall being a 2028 guy, you're like, okay, it theoretically is time for Oklahoma to really press and invest a lot of resources into the top line of that interior defensive front. What does that look like? Mm-hmm. I think Kellen Hall is part of that. It's just the timing is interesting to me. So you obviously bet and hope guys like Trent Wilson and Tank Carrington, some of these other guys we've talked about all spring, step up and take ownership of the roles that lie in front of them. But Kellen Hall feels like the next like big time defensive lineman that this OU staff really kind of goes all in for on the recruiting front. So that's one of their guys. I think it's very apparent. Kamian Comptonero gets a nice little bump, goes up.
Saw that.
Double-digit spots. Look, we've talked about him a ton. This has been my guy. Speaking of defensive line, Keone Snipes, Jamison Roberts, high school teammate, the defensive front liner out of Saraland, Alabama, who just visited for the spring game. I think Oklahoma's very close, if not towards the top for him. Debuts at 68 overall. Initially a top 70 player, and I think he's got room to climb. There is no questioning the frame and some of the athletic ability and testing stuff. He takes a step up in terms of production this season, which I think he absolutely will, and we got a live one here. Was on the phone with a personnel staffer in the FBS somewhere, and I forced them to watch Keone Snipes, and they're like, whoa. I don't know that we've talked about Joey Fleming yet here on the show.
I don't know. Maybe briefly. Maybe briefly we have. I can't remember. Was he in town for the spring game or no?
He was not. I think I talked about him after the spring game a little bit, but
okay.
Oklahoma was the first Power Four program to offer Joey Fleming, just the second ever behind Jacksonville State. And lo and behold, the Sooners got out in front for a guy that now rates number 101 overall, just outside the top 100.
Yeah, how about that?
So, hey, man, remember when they were the first to offer for a guy like Ryan Foje, and then that guy ended up in the top 100, and it was like Oklahoma did well there. A tip of the cap. There are a few other names that I talked about. Another takeaway for me, tight end in 2028, setting up pretty well for the Sooners. I think there are a couple of guys that make a lot of sense for them in the class, and they have some good opportunity with some of those players. Intriguing safety names that I'm monitoring as well. And I'm going to probably have a story today about, like, here's one guy that is my big time scouting crush in the 28 cycle, that if I could make one offer for Oklahoma today, here's who I would offer and why. So go check it all out.
Little tease there.
Again, fun 2028 cycle. Excited to talk about these guys moving forward.
Yeah, no doubt. No, we talked about it, I think maybe briefly last week. I noted it. Like, the 27 class is great. It's an awesome group. It's positioned to be top five, obviously. 28, and it's super early. It just feels like there's the makings there of it being another really good one for Oklahoma in 28. So definitely some exciting names to know. Still early in the process there, but like we said, the last like few weeks, month, the focus shifting a little bit. So definitely get that initial top 247 and kind of start to really get really ingrained in that class here over the next, you know, obviously several months and obviously the next season and beyond. All right, let's wrap up the NFL draft a little bit before we get out of here. Seven Oklahoma players were selected last week in Pittsburgh. I'll run through them real quick. Armisa Thomas went about where we thought, went to the Chiefs in the second round. Fun landing spot for him. They love OU guys. They draft one every year, basically, it seems like. Fabechi Wiwu, the second guy off the board, maybe a bit of a surprise, in the fourth round to the Texans. Grayson Holton then went to the 49ers. Kendall Daniels goes to my Falcons. I'm very excited about that. I've been a huge Kendall Daniels fan. I'm very excited. Those were all in the fourth round. Then a trio of guys in the seventh round. Robert Spears Jennings to the Steelers. Jaron Kanick, shout out, to the Titans. And then Deion Burks went much later than anyone thought. He went to the Colts in the seventh round as well. There also was four guys who signed as undrafted free agents. You had Dominic Williams signed with the Cardinals. Marvin Jones signed with the Seahawks. Kontez Lewis signed with the Bucks. And then the shocker of all shockers, Jaden Ott, signed with the Chiefs, which is just baffling. Just shocking, really.
DeMarco Murray's Chiefs, yes, by the way.
After last season and the way that all went, the fact that both parties chose to continue at the next level is really puzzling. I'd love to know, like, what – I think everyone had the same reaction of, like, what? Like, if you had to power rank the 32 teams, you would have literally put the Chiefs 32nd but that's where he signs. So we'll see how that shakes out. Colin, what stands out to you? I mean, as far as the guys drafted, the undrafted guys, I mean, where do you like where they landed? Where were you surprised? What were the thoughts, I guess, for you coming out of the draft for Oklahoma? I thought a couple guys went a little later than I thought, truthfully. But then there was a Fabechi Wiwu who went in the fourth round. Good for him. You know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm excited to go back and forth here a little bit because I'm working in recruiting, someone asked me this on the board the other day. I am a huge NFL draft nerd. I do a lot of independent study on my own to kind of help apply that to the world of recruiting. And I just love the draft in general. It's a really fun event. I enjoy following the coverage of it. I think there are a lot of really good people in the space too. And so I was really looking forward to this draft because I felt like, given the talent pool, we were going to see some head-scratching decisions and some surprises.
Mm-hmm.
Let's address one of the big surprises right off the top. I watched a video where the Chiefs, I believe it's Brett Veach, who is their one of their executives, called R. Mason Thomas and said, "Hey, our guy DeMarco Murray vouched for you heavily, and he couldn't have said better stuff." That's not at all what I was confused about. What I was confused about is if DeMarco Murray is very clearly pitching Oklahoma players heavily to the Kansas City Chiefs executive team, then what the hell was he saying to get Jaden out of contract? Like, what, where, I don't know.
It's shocking, really. And I'm very interested to see how that plays out. We would get into like fall, preseason camp and stuff. Like I would love to know, because it's just it's hard to even find the words for it, because it just makes so little sense. Like you said, that R. Mason Thomas clearly, I mean, you have to, because that was the first thing I thought was, and I don't, I've never covered the NFL, right? So I don't know the full pecking order. Like, is this a situation where they just signed him and didn't really consult DeMarco on it? That seems hard to believe. But then, like you said, when it comes to R. Mason, they got his feedback on R. Mason on defense. So, like, it stands to reason they would have done the same with Ott, and he obviously must have signed up on it, which is crazy.
I mean, he's obviously, coaches in the NFL don't really get to dictate a ton in terms of who's in their room, but they're going to have a say. They're going to offer their
opinion. Especially when they coach the guy.
Right. And NFL teams, as we know, are desperate for intel on anything they can get in the NFL draft. And I am not surprised at all that Jaden Ott found a landing spot.
It felt
like for a while, whether people liked it or not, he had a shot at getting drafted. Obviously, he's a UDFA guy, but like out of the Senior Bowl, it felt like, man, he might legitimately get picked.
He's in the mix,
Him, I think it is perfectly put by you, and I feel like it has to be said again. For him to essentially be able to land at any of the 32 NFL teams available to him and to sign with the Kansas City Chiefs, given what we know, I do not understand. I don't get it, and I am dumbfounded by it. And I'm just desperate to be a fly on the wall in terms Andy of just, Reed, give me the justification for it. How did this happen?
Andy Reid just loves you guys so much that he did it anyway. He was like, I'll be fine.
I'm just glad that we get to close the book, even though we probably don't, on that whatever that looks like. So, give me Kendall Daniels' future with the Atlanta Falcons. I mean,
it's awesome.
It's a rare opportunity for someone who watches a team every single weekend to break down what the future holds for an Oklahoma guy. So where are we seeing the future with Kendall Daniels with Atlanta?
Yeah, it's exciting, man. I mean, the Falcons have a really young, athletic defense with Billy Bowman. Obviously, it's a big part of it. They drafted Xavier Watts from Notre Dame the year before. Jalen Walker on the edge, James Pierce, all the off-field stuff with him. But I think he's probably going to still be around in some capacity. They've got a lot of really young and fun players on defense. They drafted AJ Terrell's younger brother. And so it's kind of for Kendall, not just saying it. I'm a little biased as a guy who's been a Falcons fan since he was a kid. It's a pretty good situation. Like, really. I mean, it's a fun, young defense. And it's a fun landing spot for him. And I was really pumped. I mean, I was on the Kendall Daniels train all year. And most people are. He was awesome to watch last year. But I really, really liked him. And it was a lot of fun to watch him this year. And so the fact that I get to continue to watch him play for, my team in the NFL is really cool. So I think that's a fun spot for him. There's a lot of kind of interesting young, talent on that side of the football. They were a good defense last year. They're kind of moving the right direction. I think that's a fun spot for him, frankly. I think that's a cool landing spot.
Real quick, is he playing inside linebacker or like slot outside backer?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think inside, but I don't know. I honestly don't know for sure.
I'm curious
about what the vision is, because he is such a versatile dude. So I don't know. That's a good – I don't know.
I would be very interested to see his usage at the next level. Obviously, at his size, at what, 6'5", 245, whatever, can play that cheetah role at the collegiate level. I'm curious if he is forced to kick inside, especially because, I mean, Billy Bowman got hurt last year, if I remember correctly, and it felt like they were – looking at using him as kind of that slot defender as well. I don't know. I'm very curious to see what kind of that middle group for Atlanta with some OU flavor looks like. Quickly on some of these other guys, for me, curious to hear if you have any other primary takeaways. Don't need to say much about R. Mason Thomas going to the Kansas City Chiefs. Thick landing spot for him. I am a Kansas City Chiefs hater. I'll say that for the record. I have been hating on them with their run, but there's no denying the organization, right? And so I thought R. Mason Thomas and then a little bit of Clemson flavor. I probably should have looked up whether or not Todd Bates and those guys had anything to do with this, but R. Mason Thomas and then the Chiefs picking Peter Woods, both those guys together, the former Clemson defensive tackle, that being Peter Woods. Peter Woods is a former – I mean, people thought maybe he'd end up as a first-round pick potentially. He's another guy similar to R. Mason Thomas who kind of slipped out of the first round. But, like, both of those guys can pin their ears back and go. The Chiefs have been more bigger, brawler defensive line types with Jones and Karloftis.
Right.
So now they've got R. Mason and Woods coming in there to just – fly around. I'm fascinated to see those two potentially on the same side of the line.
I like it for. I think he's going to be a good pro. Or Mason.
Yeah,
it'll be fun.
I'll kick it to you. But the other thing I want to say, Fabecchi goes fourth round.
Yeah, good for him, man.
Look, Fabecchi earned it, right? The guy. I think he did himself a ton of favors in terms of the story, the body recomposition. Right, if you'll remember, he worked on the structure of his body at Oklahoma. The position versatility that he showcased, I think, at the end of the year really did him some favors because,
yeah, for sure.
These NFL teams were all of a sudden saying, well, we get a three spot guy instead of maybe a two spot guy. And so you factor all that in. And then what I had heard when I was wearing the East West Shrine Bowl hoodie because of Fabecchi and some of these other guys that were out there got drafted. I had heard when I was at the Shrine Bowl that Fabecchi was like king of the castle, was winning over a ton of NFL staffs that weekend. And so he earned it. That being said, I think the Houston Texans drafting Marlon Klein at what, pick 54 in the second round was a testament to maybe a willingness to go out beyond the consensus board. But
sure.
Hey, man. Fabecchi Wiwu, and like this is the other big thing. Houston had a serious need in terms of the interior of the offensive line. They get Keelan Rutledge out of Georgia Tech in the first round, who was kind of a personal favorite of mine. The guy just wants to fight people, but they needed guards and centers, and Fabecchi is someone who addresses a need for them. I think he has a shot to be a part of that roster for a good while moving forward. Anything else that you had in terms of these guys that got drafted?
No, I mean, just kind of rounding up real quick. I mean, I thought Grayson Halton, I thought he had a pretty good shot at day two, but not a bad landing spot at all with San Francisco, another organization that really likes OU guys and is a good franchise. So I think a pretty good spot for him in the fourth round. And then just kind of good for RSJ and Kanick getting drafted, especially Kanick. Like, that is what a story for him. You know, I mean, converts to tight end. Had a decent year, all things considered. I mean, a pretty solid year, really. And he gets drafted in the NFL as a tight end. Like, that's awesome. Good for him. And also, Jaron's a good dude that we all like. And so that's really cool. On the negative side, what a slide for Burks. I mean, that's a guy that we thought was going to be day two for sure. Falls all the way to the seventh round of the Colts. I think some of the injury history really kind of dinged him a little bit.
Correct.
Which is too bad. And obviously, you know, now it's up to him to go you know, prove people wrong, right? I mean, to get in there, stay healthy, and try to do some damage. I do think it's a pretty good spot for him, you know, in a dome, you know, things like that with the Colts, Daniel Jones. You know, I mean, I feel like there are certainly worse situations that he could have wound up in than in Indianapolis. And then also Dominic Williams not getting drafted. Now, I kind of thought, I mean, we knew it was going to be kind of tough for him, but you held out hope that, you know, maybe he could get, which same thing, right? I mean, it's up to him now. He has an opportunity with Arizona to go and, you know, try to prove people wrong and to make his way. I mean, it was always going to be tough for Dom because Dom Williams is never, and I think OU fans struggle with this sometimes in that he never did anything flashy, right? He's not going to get a bunch of sacks. He's not a big stat. He doesn't do anything on Saturday that really catches your eye. It's more just, he just swallows up dudes. Like he just moves bodies around and he opens things up for these other guys, for Grayson Holton to get all those sacks. Like that's a big part of what made Dom Williams so good. And so I wouldn't put it past him doing that in the NFL and for him to have a long NFL career. And so,
yeah,
we'll be pulling for him. You know, you hope maybe he could get drafted, but we knew it was going to be tough, but you know, so, you know, rooting for all these guys, and good for Keontae Lewis after a scary year for him to get
pulling for that guy. That's hard. Cool, yeah.
You know? And so, you know, pulling for all these guys, obviously you get to know them over the years, covering them here. And so, yeah, we'll be pulling for all these guys. But, yeah, the big winner was Fabecchi. I mean, to go in the fourth round, I mean, that's a guy that I think if you had asked us before last season, we would have thought maybe drafted, probably needs a good year. I mean, fourth round, that's nice, man. So good for him.
Yeah, I have a level of appreciation for Dominic Williams. I think that guy, if you really break down the role that he played for Oklahoma – I've said it countless times, like, oh, you had four defensive tackles who might be able to start on any SEC team. Mm-hmm. And he's certainly a part of that. And he played his role at an extremely high level. The value he brought to, I mean, especially help free up other guys on that defensive line. I have a level of appreciation for his game. And I think that he really impacted Oklahoma in a level that may not be fully absorbed by the casual fan.
Yeah.
And then here's what I couldn't get out of my head with Deion Burks. Remember the Missouri game in that awful 24 season?
Yeah.
Where he's going through a lot. He's coming off injury. It's like, man, he's going to come back. And if I remember, he's running a crossing route and he like slams his head on the ground. And it's like, man, you know, I wonder if the injury history was not discussed enough in relation to Burks, because the NFL, as we know, the medical flags are going to keep them from investing. And I feel like, unfortunately, that really impacted Burks' process. But I think that the Colts understood the value of the selection. I think he's got a legitimate shot to be part of that receiver rotation at Indy. So I'm excited for him.
Yeah, for sure. No, I'll be pulling for him. And so we'll see, you know, if he can make some waves. And it wouldn't surprise you at all if he's a guy that, like, the first preseason game, it's like, oh, Deion Burks had, you know, 40-yard touchdown. You know, I mean, he's that kind of guy. So, yeah, good for – congrats to all these dudes. And look forward to next year, as OU should have a lot more guys in next year's draft. 2027, we're talking about potentially Stone and Jackson. Talked about Taylor Wine. There's a lot of – obviously, Mateer, what kind of year can he have? There's a lot of dudes who – will be, I think, heavily discussed on the draft front for Oklahoma going into next year as well. I think that's it for now. Good show. Football Thursday packed in April. We can bring you football around here. We'll be back next week. Tom and I should be back on Monday. We'll hit, obviously, the Diamond Sports. Been a very busy hoops portal. A lot to talk about there. It's been a very interesting portal cycle for OU hoops. We'll get into that on Monday quite a bit with Tom and I, and like I said, Diamond Sports as well, some other things. Colin and I will circle back next Thursday. We'll hit the latest on the recruiting side, maybe some other team stuff as necessary, but we shift into May. We're moving right along. And also, Sooner Caravans are coming up real soon, by the way, so we should be able to hear from Brent Venables and presumably Jim Nagy again here soon, which is nice. So we'll probably have a little more meat on the bone there as well with them here coming up in the next week or so. So keep an eye out for that, and we'll communicate more details about that once we have them as far as what that looks like here coming up in the month of May. But I think that's it for now. CK, appreciate you as always, sir. We'll catch up next week. What do you got going on this weekend? I always feel like you're just out doing something.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think I get the weekend off.
Oh, so shocking. I'm
excited about that.
Not so good, man. Try to rest up a little bit. I feel like you're on the move all the time, so rest up a little bit. All right, I think that's it then. We'll get out of here. Tom and I back on Monday. Colin and I will circle back next Thursday. For Colin Kennedy, I'm Josh Calloway. Signing off. See you next time right back here, as always, on Sooners Illustrated.